Hi, I'm Greg Mangum, founder and voluntary CEO of Only a Pavement Away. We're the charity that supports people looking to rebuild their lives through employment opportunities in hospitality. And welcome back to our podcast series, Serving Success. Today I'm joined by our Veterans Ambassador, Baz Gray, ex-Royal Marine and now Yeoman Warder at the Tower London. So, Baz, welcome. All ready to get going?
We are, Greg. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I have to say, folks, this is something I never, ever thought I would be doing, is interviewing an ex-Royal Marine, someone who's crossed the Arctic and is now a Yeoman Warder. So this is a great privilege to me. So I think probably what all our viewers want and listeners want to know is, Baz, is how did you join the Royal Marines and how did it shape the person you are today?
Yeah, well, I've got to take you back to being a 14-year-old boy, really, because that's where it started for me. It was one of those days where my life just changed almost instantly. I was brought up in a military family. I was always around the military. It was very likely I was going to join probably the regiment that my dad was in, the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. And we were living in Cyprus at the time, and I went to a school called St. John's, which was a military school just outside Episcopi. And this group of men came in this one day, and volunteers were asked if they wanted to go and spend the day with these men, and they were called the Royal Marine Commandos. And I thought, that sounds interesting. I didn't really know a lot about them, but by the end of that day, all I wanted to do was be a Royal Marine Commando from being 14 years of age. And that's pretty much what I did. Roll forward a couple of years, I'm still to this day one of the youngest people ever to join. Because, you know, before my 18th birthday, I had passed out of the toughest military infantry training in the world, which is 32 weeks long down in Limpston. And I wasn't yet even 18, and I was already a member of this elite organisation.
I know from times we've talked before, we think we could actually him for a good 8 hours today, having heard some of your stories. But when you left the military and to becoming a Yeoman Warder, was it a big transition for you?
Well, I did it on my choice. I had an incredible career, 26 years, a very busy career. I finished as a regimental sergeant major. I was a mountain leader. You know, I was doing, you know, some really tough jobs, really tough things. But in 2005, I went on a ship called HMS Endurance. I spent quite a lot of time down in Antarctica as a cold weather advisor and trainer to the captain and 122 crew. And I fell in love with Antarctica. I fell in love with Antarctic history. And I wanted to go out and test myself more in that environment, doing expeditions and things. And you couldn't have a military career and do that sort of thing. So I decided after 26 years it was time for a new adventure, and that's why I decided to left. So I left on my own term, and I had a plan when I left, and my plan was to ski solo unsupported from the edge of Antarctica to the South Pole. But then how am I going to fund that? So I started getting into leadership and doing other things to sort of pay my way while doing expeditions and climbing mountains and things. So I sort of had the best of both worlds, and it was on my terms. So I actually found the transition quite easy for me because I planned it properly, and it was just the right time for me in my life.
Just your story, I keep saying, is phenomenal. I think one thing I just need to put in here was when you helped us out on hiking against homelessness.
We did. That's where I first met you all, wasn't it? Up in Snowdon.
Yeah.
For a good friend of mine, Scotty Mills, who we all know, who normally helped you out, couldn't. So we reached out to his network, and I said, you know, I'd love to get involved and help out if you can. And we had a great weekend.
We did. I just remember saying to the 50-odd hikers that they were going to do a mock Royal Marine workout on the Friday night. And I just remember you turning around and said, I don't do mock marine workouts.
Yeah.
But they loved every minute of it. Still,
they did.
Still, yes. Talk about
yes,
it.
Yes, they did.
So, look, you're a Yeoman Warder now. Can you tell our listeners, what is a Yeoman Warder? What is a Beefeater?
Yeah, so the term Beefeater, we don't really know where that comes from. It could have something to do with eating off the king's table, being paid in meat sometime in our history, but we don't actually have an accurate, real, confident line that we can say this is where it started, where it began. But it's a lot easier than a full job title, which is Yeoman Warder of His Majesty's Royal Palace and Fortress, the Tower of London, member of the Sovereign's Bodyguard of the Yeoman Guard Extraordinary. So that's the full job title. So Beefeater is a lot easier, isn't it? It's an extremely iconic role that goes back to 1485 when Henry VII overthrew Richard III. He then formed a new bodyguard, if you like, a yeoman of the guard for the monarchy and their sort of family, etc. And in 1509, when Henry VIII came to the throne, when he went travelling with his large courts and things, which he travelled a lot, he left behind an element of the Yeoman of the Guard at the Tower to maintain sort of a security presence there. And the Yeoman Warders of the Tower of London were born. And we have been there ever since, 540 years of history. And we are still to this day the King's bodyguard and the custodians and keepers of the Tower of London, wearing one of the oldest traditional uniforms of any force or organisation in the world.
Not wanting to put you on the spot, Baz, what are you doing on Friday?
So on Friday, I'm going to be in my state dress uniform and I'm going to be at Windsor Castle. And the Royal Marines are unveiling their new colours, which is a really big thing for military regiments. The colours is a very important sort of part of tradition in history in any military organisation. And the King, as the head of the Royal Marines, will be heading that parade. So I will be one of the yeomen of the guard on parade with the King. So we don't get to do it very often. So it'll be the first time in my role as a yeoman of the guard that I'll be in state dress uniform alongside the King on parade. So that's a real highlight and going to be a real treat for me.
And I know it's something that we're only a payment away and all the people who support us will be very proud to hear about when they listen to this podcast.
That's incredible, yeah.
So going back to the event you held for us at the Tower, there was something very special there that shows how the world's moving on. It was the first all-female-led ceremony?
Yeah, so the ceremony of the keys is the traditional locking up of the Tower of London every night. And we know this has been happening without fail every night for over 700 years. Now, the Yeoman Warders have been running that locking up of the ceremony since we arrived there, you know, in the early 1500s, where the chief yeoman warder will collect an armed escort who will then escort him and the watchman, another yeoman warder, to the gates to lock up. Predominantly over most of our history, the warders at the Tower of London have all been male. They've all generally come from the army, the RAF from 1925, the Royal Marines from 1982, and then the Royal Navy from around 2010. Females joined the body in 2007, and we have now five female yeoman warders, but more and more females are getting into some of the frontline roles in the military as well. So to have the military armed escort at the Tower and the yeoman warder team and the deputy governor, who's a female, all running the ceremony at the same time, so an all-female ceremony really, was the first time in the history of over 700 years. And you got to witness that when you came and visited the Tower. So not only is it an incredibly special event anyway, it was a doubly special event because you got to witness a first in over 700 years of history.
I know, and what was really a great coincidence was that we had a lady called Shireen Ritchie there, who's one of our ambassadors, and she set up a thing called Broadwork of how to get women onto board positions within hospitality, because we have so many great women in our industry, we just need to make sure they get onto the boards. And I don't know, Shireen found it was great to see that happening and that inclusion. So, as Veterans Ambassador for Only a Pavement Away, what is it you do and why was it important to you?
Yeah, so, well, these are conversations, obviously, that started with you, Greg, early on. And, you know the value, and anyone who works with veterans, you know the value of what they can offer, you know, discipline, punctuality. They'll be smart, they've got great attitudes and those sorts of things. But even people with that instilled of them do fall on hard times. And I've seen this and witnessed this. As a regimental sergeant major in the Marines, I've seen how people have gone from excellent disciplined professionals to just not knowing how to cope with life. And predominantly a huge amount of it is to do with conflict. It's to do with mental health illnesses, things that even the people suffering don't really understand or get themselves. And their lives can fall apart so quickly. I still work and talk to families that I looked after when I was serving as a regimental sergeant major, you know, because I've had to do those door knocks where I'm telling families, sorry, your son's not coming home, you know, and it's a horrible thing to do. But people do come home with, you know, just trauma that they don't understand and know how to deal with. And this can lead to veterans falling down to, to some very low points. And what I've seen in this charity is real people, genuine people that understand how to lift these people up and bring them into an environment or a world that will give them some sort of feeling of success again in their lives. Many, many veterans are out there that I feel we need or can do a lot more help for. A lot of people don't admit they're veterans, and they don't really appreciate the help and the support that they can get out there. So with an established charity like this one, and my skill sets with talking to veterans and understanding the problems, I think it makes a great combination to give me an opportunity to go out there and add more value to the charity, to be able to do more to veterans, which is what I know the charity wants to do.
And I think that's great, because we've toyed with working with veterans and people and veterans that have got blockers to getting back into careers and society. But now having you on board, Baz, is that we've got someone who actually understands the internals of the veteran community rather than us looking in and thinking.
And I think that's really important.
But we don't understand it really.
It's really important, because veterans, it's almost like you've got the first 5 seconds and they will know whether they're going to trust you and talk to you. It's all about them understanding and really feeling that you get them.
Yeah.
That you listen to them, you've been one of them, and there's a way to do it and there's a way not to do it, you know. And just by helping people and helping other people in the charity learn how to talk to veterans,
yeah,
you know, will give you a much better opportunity of them actually listening, pricking their ears up and going, well, actually, I think there might be something in this for me, you know. And if we've just got to turn a couple, then get their stories out there, then others will start listening. And before you know it, hopefully, in a few years' time, we've got this snowball effect where it just becomes a known thing for veterans to be able to lean into, you know, when or if they fall on hard times.
Yeah, no, absolutely brilliant. And just done, raised £50,000 for us. You ran over 3.5 days, 232 miles on an event called Source to See. What is Source to See?
So Source to See was just my annual event, if you like. I've done so many of these big challenges, and I've got the skills and I've got a great network and connection of people that always get behind me and support me when I do these endurance challenges, and I'm quite sort of well known for it. It's something I've taught myself how to do mentally over many, many years. And every year I like to do something that challenges me personally, because that's what gets me up in the morning. It's what gets me out jogging and looking after myself. I love the outdoors. I love exercise, and that's what keeps me mentally stable and sane. So these challenges are something that I really enjoy doing. And because I'm in London and I'm working with Only a Pavement Away, and I see every time I go through an underpass, you know, someone who's homeless, and there's quite a few there with their signs up saying ex-army with their numbers and things like that, and it's just everywhere. So I thought, well, okay, this year I'm going to run the Thames. So the source of the Thames is up in the Cotswolds, and it finishes at the Thames Barrier, but I thought that wasn't good enough. We're going to have to go all the way to the sea, because it had a better ring to it. So I added 50 miles and we went Source to Sea and ran the entire length of the Thames to Southend, where you all met me and we had a great finish. So I had 3 hours sleep, 75 hours running, 232 miles later, we were in, and we'd raised a load of cash, which we can now use to support this charity in some great ways.
Yeah, and I have to say, probably the most embarrassing thing for me on that was that we met you at the end of Southend Pier, and Jill and I were there, and Jill said, come on, we won't worry about waiting for the train, we'll walk. And I just remember walking to the end of Southend Pier, being absolutely knackered, and having to sit down, and then you jogged in like you just run from...
And that wasn't
the
actual
pier,
plan.
Not 232 miles.
The actual plan wasn't to finish at the end of the pier, but one of my friends, great friends from Southend, said, you have to run to the end of pier and I'll sponsor you an extra few hundred quid if you do so. So I couldn't say no.
No. So, and I think what got to me was the camaraderie, how ex-colleagues of yours from the military all turned up, didn't they? They had their berets on, their uniforms. It was just... It was just the camaraderie that came out there and the pride.
Yeah, I mean, the Royal Marines specifically, I've always been very good at that. We are a very small family, and you know, and I've always raised money for the Royal Marines charity generally, but this is the first time I've switched. And I think for this year, it was a very good reason. I'm working with you. It's still veterans related. It's still all about the homeless and helping people in the right way. But the story, the narrative, people just got behind it. They loved it. You know, there was people turning up at 2 or 3 in the morning to run with me, to support me, to help me. You know, Marines were just appearing out of bushes with head torches on and going, all right, Baz, let's go. And it's the family, the Royal Marine family has always been incredible. The Forces family in general has always been incredible. And I've always been lucky to have some great people around me that I've always got behind my, you know, not just from the Marines, but from a network, from running leadership sort of stuff over the last 9 or 10 years. People just seem to like the narratives, they like the stories, which are important, and they understand that by supporting me, they can make a genuine difference.
So you're going to do another one next year?
I say at the end of every single one, I've retired now. I've probably retired 10 times from doing these events, so I would probably say yes. What that is, what it looks like, I've got no idea yet, but normally it's a drunken conversation over a bar, in a bar somewhere, where I just make up some idea, and then I make it public straight away, so that means I have to do it, and then I've stitched myself right up, and then I have to get into the training and go again, but yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, we're definitely going to watch this space and promote whatever you do. So over the next few years, what do you think our plan should be to get more veterans who are facing blockers into hospitality?
So Own Your Payment Away has got a fantastic reputation already. You know, it is trusted, it is believed in by the hospitality industry. Just look at the amount of people that are sponsoring you, etc. So, and it's one of the reasons I came on board. It's a genuine charity that people trust and like and appreciate, and it's got real tangible results. So by using that model and by physically having someone focusing on veterans, we can slowly start to build a reputation in that area as well, like the reputation you've already got, where the military charities, the bigger charities and the smaller charities start to see Own Your Payment Away as a trusted partner. And that's what I want to do, is help people understand, learn and become part of this as a natural go-to, not me trying to convince them, because those that I have sat down with have all responded really positively, because they didn't really understand what the offer was or what the package was. And they think they've got something else that already does that for them. So they go, we don't really need that. But when I get in a room and sit them down, I show them how this is different. And most of our members don't like hospitality. They say, well, let's take away the word hospitality. It's one of the second or third biggest industries in the country. You know, there are warehouse jobs, security jobs. You know, there are all sorts of, you know, maintenance roles. It's not just about standing behind a bar in a pub or serving someone in a restaurant or washing up pots in a kitchen. There's so many more opportunities. So it's not just educating the charities that will end up finding these people or having these people on their books. It's also about educating hospitality industry that if you want veterans, look further than just the normal hospitality roles. Look at the back of house jobs and start talking about opportunities that we can find where the word hospitality doesn't necessarily need to be used, because it can be an off-putting word sometimes. So that's it, Greg, really, is building the reputation in that community and starting to get more people talking and listening and getting fired in this direction.
Brilliant. And I think that one of the things we didn't say earlier, I've got to mention, is do you actually live at the Tower, don't you?
Of course, yes. I live in a Royal Palace. It's fantastic. Seven Tower Green, actually, which is famously the most haunted house in the Tower. So I gave that information to the family after they moved in. So
I know, yeah. Claire did say to me that you hadn't mentioned it. Sort of, that,
yeah, that's it, home.
Yeah? No, it was phenomenal. So we're going to do some quick-fire questions now.
Come on, then.
So, favourite meal to order at a restaurant?
Easy, steak. A nice, big, juicy steak.
Right.
Lovely.
If you could have dinner with any figure, past or present, who would it be and why?
Also very easy for me. I'm a massive fan of polar history. I've done talks on polar history all over the world, and I've spent a huge amount of time in Antarctica. It would be Sir Ernest Shackleton for me. What that man did and achieved in his life is like no other. Almost everything he set out to do failed, but that was because he was a pioneer. We didn't really understand, you know, the extremes of the things he was attempting to do, especially down in Antarctica. But it was the manner and the way in which he would get himself out of these situations, how he became so trusted, and he's now recognised as one of the best leaders this country has ever seen, and I would just love to pick his brains.
Because you're still very close to the Shackleton family, right?
Yes, his granddaughter Zaz is a very good friend of mine, and you know, I see her regularly. We go out for meals. She lives in the Hammersmith area, and she's a wonderful old lady that I spend a lot of time with.
Brilliant. And describe Only a Payment Away in one word.
Determined.
And what guest would you like to hear on the next Serving Station?
This is a really difficult question, and I have no idea. I would like someone that is incredibly powerful in the hospitality industry, that someone that you would like to pull in, someone we can convince to come in have a conversation around how they can help and go forward. I think someone who can be of huge benefit to the charity, not necessarily someone famous, but just someone who can be, you know, a real asset and support to what it is you're trying to do.
I mean, it's been absolutely fantastic, and thank you, Baz, for joining us today. It's a big thank you to our sponsors, Stonegate, and I think without being too political, I just wanted to thank you, Baz, because the reason we can do this podcast and the reason we can walk here today is because of the 26 years that you put in to secure our freedom to have this. And I know that you face some pretty tough situations. It's not all just been easy going or the exciting bit. So I think on behalf of everybody, we wanted to thank you for what you've given us.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Greg. Really, really kind. Thank you.